This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th. Rabia here. I'm here with Susan. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Rabia.
And I have a very special guest on this week. I'm very excited because I love it when there's like crossover on podcasts. Anybody who follows any of our work in the true crime stuff has heard me talk about the show that this gentleman hosts, and I'm talking about Toby Ball. Toby Ball is a panelist on the podcast Crime Writers On. He's also the host of, best title ever, Balls Deep, Balls Deep Dive Book Club, which both
Wait,
Susan
is that the
I
real title? I thought that was a joke title.
It's both.
It's both. So the Balls Deep Dive Book Club, which Susan and I both have been on, in which we review, I think they're pretty almost true crime books. And Toby's also the author of the City Trilogy of noir novels. And Toby, I did not know this, but I recently learned that he has done a lot of political work and is very politically involved, because we don't get to hear that on Crime Writers On. But Toby previously worked at Congressional Quarterly. He spent time as a climate change activist, and right now he's active in Democratic politics in New Hampshire. Welcome to the show, Toby.
Thank you.
How are you doing?
Good. It's like to talk a little politics.
Have you ever been on a political show, or this is kind of like your personal thing, or?
No, I've never been on a political show. And, you know, crime writers were pretty like intentional about not getting into politics. Right. So it's a lot of like tongue biting, I guess, on my part.
Really?
Well, that's interesting. I would think you're all kind of in the same corner on Crime Writers On, no?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think if the four of us got together and talked politics, we'd all be on the same page. But I think, you know, politics is just so pervasive that I think we made a decision early on that we would sort of delve into that as little as possible. So I think sometimes we talk about political things around, you know, criminal justice issues, but it's rarely kind of like full-on politics, you know, political parties, elections, things like that.
Well, you are definitely the resident skeptic on the show. And I'm going to be honest, I mean, this is going to be terrible, but when I read that you are active in Democratic politics, I was like, what? I totally thought you were Republican.
Oh, really?
Why?
Oh, that's crazy. I'm super liberal. I'm sure I'm the most liberal.
I think only in the last maybe 5 or 6 months I've noticed on the show Rebecca commenting more and more. I think she calls you the resident woke something, where I started getting confused. But before that, I totally thought, I don't know why. Anyway, Susan, I guess you didn't get the same vibe. I was just confused.
Yeah, that's just you.
That's just me. All right. So let's start with election updates. It's been a week now since the midterm elections, and, you know, the day after, Susan and I, it's still going. It's still election night. But I will say this, it's looking better and better since the last week for Democrats, because, you know, we were debating whether or not it was a wave or a blip or a what. But right now it looks like we are close to picking up 40 House seats, which is kind of amazing. It's the party's best showing since post-Watergate midterms. And there are still a bunch of uncalled races. There's two uncalled Senate races. There is the governor's race in Georgia is still uncalled. There's 11 uncalled House races. It's looking more and more like a wave. What do you guys think?
I hate the term wave, and I want to stop talking about it. It's just, I feel like it's
a
whole distraction.
It was the hope that brought us this far.
Like, the whole idea of a wave, like, in very few circumstances, is there going to be a thing that you can call a wave and not debate it? And the debate, to me, feels like a misdirect of energy.
What do you think, Toby?
Yeah, I agree. And I think part of the disappointment was there was a lot put into, say, Beto is one who, you know, was it really realistic for him to win just from the start? I think people got a little bit carried away with his chances just because he was such an attractive candidate. And then I think the races in Florida.
But don't you run to lose the first time? I mean, isn't that kind of like how it is? I thought he had an incredible showing for a first-time candidate.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. No, I think he way outperformed what anybody could have thought. And so I don't know if he's thinking he's going to run against John Cornyn, who I think is up in 2020, or whether he's got sort of national politics in mind. But I think, you know, towards the end, I think people started to have some hope that he might be able to pull it off. And, it just kind of felt like that was never really on.
to me, that's kind of like when people talk about Hillary and her failed, you know, efforts when she won the popular vote. I feel like it was kind of neck and neck much of that.
He did a good job. I'm not, it's not criticism of him. It's just it was not, he could have won. It was never impossible, but it was also always a long shot.
Right. And I think with Hillary, you know, she did win the popular vote, and it was the way the Electoral College is set up, where these small rural states have so much more weight than the larger states that it makes it hard for, you know, Democrats have to win by a fairly decent majority of the popular vote in order to carry enough states to win the Electoral College.
It's kind of rigged.
Don't Toby, what was your election? We got enough of that going around right now.
Yeah, we've been talking about that in a bit. Toby, what was your election night like? I mean, you said you're active in Democratic politics. What do you do there?
Well, so generally, especially in presidential elections, I live in Durham, New Hampshire, which is where the University of New Hampshire is. And so during a presidential election, I usually spend some of the day driving a van, picking up students at the Memorial Union building on campus and driving them to the polls, which is, you know, a mile and a half or 2 miles away. And so in 2016, really Durham, and that means students, were the difference between Kelly Ayotte and Maggie Hassan. And Maggie Hassan, the Democrat, won. And if you can kind of extrapolate, and you know, she was one of the votes that kept Obamacare from being overturned. So that our like town ended up being pretty important in the national scheme of things. So, but this time I went out, I canvassed a little bit in the morning, but then I worked at the polling place. And again, because we have students, a lot of first-time voters come through our town. So I was helping kind of triage that a little bit. I think we were expecting about 3,000 people to show up to vote in our town, and it ended up being close to 7,000. I think we registered 1,600 new voters. You know, in some ways it's really inspiring in that, you know, all these students, and it's not easy, and it was raining, and it's not close to campus. And there were long, long lines at times. I mean, kids were in line for, I mean, not compared to like Florida, but for if you're a student, you know, waiting an hour, hour and a half to register so that you can then wait another line to go vote. So, yeah, so it was pretty inspiring. And then I went home and had a beer and watched the returns come in.
Sounds good. Well, in the aftermath, I mean, like what's happening right now with the recounts and stuff, you know, the president is not staying out of it. He's diving headfirst into this and talking about rigged. I want to talk a little bit about his reaction, as not just his reaction. I think the GOP reaction in general seems to be like,
this is not a Trump thing. This is definitely a GOP thing.
So Susan, why don't you lead us into this conversation?
So going into this election, 2018, I was worried about, you know, electoral legitimacy becoming an issue, that they would try and undermine, well, you know, democracy in general. And that night it looked like that was totally wasted worry because, you know, that didn't happen. The stuff that everyone was afraid about in 2016, if Trump had lost and he tried to attack his election, didn't happen. And then a couple days later, yeah, it's happening now. It turns out that it's not just Trump. Marco Rubio's on board. I mean, like, all the GOP mostly, with the exception of, like, the candidate in Arizona, have now jumped on this is a fraudulent election train, and the recounts are a sham, and this is an attempt to steal an election. When actually, it's not even a recount. It's just the count they were objecting to.
Right.
Some serious language.
They do not want the votes counted.
I mean, the language they were using is very serious and very scary. They're accusing us of being like forged ballot boxes, all kinds of stuff. And this will have long-term
effects. Morning, Trump tweeted that. This morning, Trump tweeted the Florida election should be called in favor of Rick Scott and Ron DeSantis in that large numbers of new ballots showed up out of nowhere. Many ballots are missing or forged. An honest vote count is no longer possible. Ballots massively infected. So, like you said, this is not even a recount issue. This is just like the initial count.
This is just the votes coming in.
This is the votes coming in. Also, all the law enforcement like officials who would be investigating, they're like, there has been absolutely no claim of fraud in this election. We have no investigations ongoing because there's nothing happening.
Yeah, this is going to be serious. I mean, it's hard to come back from this when you have your own leaders questioning the legitimacy of elections, that they're actually probably going to win in the end anyway. 2020 is going to be scary.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a theory that this is a trial run, right? That you know, if Trump loses in 2020, that these are the tactics he's going to use to call the election into doubt.
But what could be the possible end result of that? Okay, so he goes on Twitter and rants and raves and said it's fraudulent. I mean, like, he's doing that now. So what? I mean, like, what is it really going to impact? It can't actually impact the actual outcome of the count.
It can impact how America perceives the vote and perceives elections. It massively undermines public confidence in elections. That's the real danger. What you can't quantify, you can't feel, so maybe it's not seen as important, but actually that's everything. If people don't trust elections, you don't have democracy anymore.
So holiday season is right around the corner, and as much as I love having my house jam-packed with kids and family and friends, well, the worst part is actually cleaning. The cleaning beforehand and the cleaning up afterwards. But here's the thing. Grove has an amazing and exclusive offer from Mrs. Meyers. And if you know anything about cleaning products, you know exactly what Mrs. Meyers is. Some of my favorite cleaning products. I love their holiday scents. Mrs. Meyers has Iowa pine, peppermint, orange clove, and new customers get a holiday set when you place your first order of $20. You get a free Mrs. Meyers holiday hand soap, a free holiday dish soap, a free Mrs. Meyers holiday multi-surface spray, a Grove Collaborative Red Cleaning Caddy, which you can fill with Grove Collaborative Walnut Scrubber Sponges. I mean, that's not easy to say, but these things are fantastic. I got some in my last shipment of Grove products, and I love these sponges, and they're strong and durable, just like a scrubber sponge should be. Now, if you spend $39, you're also going to get a free Grove stoneware tray to beautifully display your new holiday soaps, and that looks wonderful in a powder room and stuff. You know, when you have guests over, y'all know what I mean. Now look, shop Grove before this exclusive holiday offer runs out, because all the stuff is going to be gone come December. For a limited time, our listeners who sign up get amazing free Mrs. Meyers holiday products, a free 60-day VIP membership, and a surprise bonus gift just for you when you sign up and place an order of only $20 or more. So check out Grove and our special offer at grove.co/45th. Once again, that's grove.co.com/45th.
And I think you can also look at Bush versus Gore, where if it comes down to the Supreme Court making decisions about when to stop counts or which ballots to allow, you know, that's part of what the whole Kavanaugh thing was about, was that you now have this politicized Supreme Court as well. So I think as much doubt as you can sow, and if you can push things to the Supreme Court, I think they probably feel pretty confident that they'll prevail.
I mean, they'd have to get it out of Florida first, I guess, to get it to the Supreme Court, which doesn't seem like it's going to happen. But what's going on in Georgia, by the way, Susan?
Much the same. So right now we have the three sort of big outstanding races is Arizona Senate, which seems like that one's actually resolving pretty much smoothly.
Right.
Not much drama, which we'll get back to a bit. But in Georgia and Florida, Georgia, it's the governor's race. And in Florida, it's the Senate and the governor's race. And apparently there's GOP pushback against the Republican candidate in Arizona because she is refusing to get on board with this whole, it's a fraud, it's a forgery, it's a rigged election campaign.
Good on her.
Well, she's probably going to be in the Senate one way or the other.
Yeah, for her, like she has no, I mean, I hopefully she also wouldn't do this anyway, but she personally has very little reason to do this, to attack the institutions that she wants to rely on later on.
I thought she's not ahead, though.
She's not.
Well, she's... So John Kyle was the person who was put into McCain's seat after he died, and right. Kyle's pretty clearly just a placeholder. So the thought is that he'll step down, and then McSally will be put in his seat. Okay. And then she'll be up for a special election, I think, in 2020. She wins either way.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
But the side effect is that we now have one campaign where this whole irresponsible claim of election fraud isn't happening, even though it's basically the same setup as it's going on right now in Florida and Georgia.
Well, I mean, this being disingenuous is like nothing new
it's
at this point.
It's not disingenuous, though. I feel like we're now, this is definitely the whole frog boiling scenario thing, where we are not reacting to an outright attack on our ability to function as a democracy. I mean, we're just assuming everyone's going to ignore Trump, but not everyone's going to ignore it. If 20% of people fully believe what Trump is saying right now, that's a crisis.
What about other kinds of election irregularities we're worried about? I don't think there's any evidence of any kind of foreign interference this time, of any kind of breaches with, well, although on election day, you know, there were there were some reports of like irregularities with machines and this and that, but I don't think any of that's sussed out, right?
Nothing. I've something. Seen. It's been okay. Purely domestic shit show.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's ridiculous, but I still say I feel a little bit of a measure of relief that there isn't evidence of that kind of stuff either. So I wanted to talk about, the bottom just, well, you never hit bottom when it comes to GOP. And I wanted to talk about this video that surfaced the other day. There's an upcoming Senate runoff in Mississippi. A video surfaced of U.S. Senator, actual Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith, who faces a runoff right now against an African-American opponent. She was at a public event and she joked about attending a public hanging.
Wow, I missed this.
Oh, you missed it. Yeah. She was talking about one of her supporters and she said, if he invited me to a public hanging, I'd be on the front row.
What the fuck?
Okay, she's talking about a local rancher. Yeah. Now, this happened on just a couple days ago.
Why would you even say that? Like, is that like a phrase that people say? Is that a thing?
I don't know. Is it a thing, Toby?
I would not put myself out as an expert on that. Now, it's strange. I mean, it's clearly signaling, right? I mean, it's...
Right. As the resident Southerner, I'm going to say I've never heard of that being like some kind of, lowbrow colloquial term we use. No, it's not. It's, as far as I'm aware, it's not a thing. Mississippi, maybe it is, but not in Georgia.
A term of affection.
Well, if you think about public hangings in Mississippi, there's only one way to understand that. Yeah, all right. I mean, Mississippi has had maybe the most difficult racial history in this country. 581 lynchings between 1882 and 1968, which is the most of any state in that period. Public lynchings were a matter of course for decades in Mississippi. So for her to say that against a black opponent, I don't know. It seems more than a coincidence to me.
No, it's not. It's not. It's exactly what it sounds like.
Yeah. And you know what's going to happen? Nothing. Absolutely nothing's going to happen. She might have gotten some votes out of that. All right. Okay, there is a real shit show around Matthew Whitaker.
Yes. So guess what? It took less than 24 hours for him to get rid of Sessions, which I was surprised by. We knew it was going to happen, but I thought he'd wait until Friday. I think Sessions all the same.
It happened the morning that we recorded last week.
Yeah.
Sessions resigned forcefully.
So there's open obstruction of justice going on. We now have a president. It's now okay in the United States for the president to try and seize control investigations into him to stop them. And that's just how we roll now. That's, again, another long-term disaster for democracy in America. And he does it in the most incompetent way possible by choosing this, this joker, Whitaker, who is now our acting AG.
But don't you guys think that this was pretty strategic? I mean, he already had this guy in the position waiting, right?
I'm gonna say it was a strategic attempt. I'm not going to, say it was, a good strategic plan.
A smart one?
Yeah. It was a strategy. I can say that.
I think it was even a little ham-handed, I mean, this guy is just so clearly not fit to serve. Whereas I think with Sessions, if Sessions hadn't recused himself, I think that was the kind of person who, could credibly, quote unquote, credibly serve in that position. I think Whitaker is just... There's no reason to have him there other than his sort of statements that he thinks the Mueller probe is illegitimate. There's no collusion and, yada, yada, yada. He's got a really sketchy background.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about the sketchy background and also the fact that Trump has first said, oh, I know Matt Whitaker and, he's great. Mm-hmm. And actually, in the last week, he's also did support of him. And then just a few days ago, he's like, I don't know Matt Whitaker except by reputation. He's going back and forth. But let's talk a little bit about Whitaker, because I really did not know anything about this guy until Sessions.
He basically did the whole strategy of get on TV, be an angry attack dog and hope Trump is watching TV.
This was crazy.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I read about that. So he wanted to get Trump's attention. So he made it his business to get on to was he on CNN or Fox?
CNN.
CNN. Right. And then he would get on there and say outlandish things in support of Trump because he was talking just to Trump and it worked. And he got this appointment.
We'll hopefully find out now that we have Democrats taking over the House in a couple months. But I suspect the plan was from the start for this to happen, because in October of 2017, he was suddenly chosen, not by Jeff Sessions, but for him, which is weird in itself, to be his chief of staff. And basically plugged in there and became the White House's spy in the DOJ.
Now, he was a former U.S. attorney, right? So it's not like he comes out of... I mean, he has some credentials, but it seems like he...
Not for AG, though.
Not for AG. Well, a couple of things, like Toby, you mentioned about his comments on the Mueller probe. Other things he said the courts are okay. First of all, as an attorney, as a U.S. attorney, I don't understand. But he said the courts are supposed to be the inferior branch of government, and that one of the worst Supreme Court rulings is Marbury versus Madison. Right. He also said that judges should have a biblical view of justice instead of a secular worldview.
He specified New Testament, so.
Because we can't go further back than that. here's what I want to know. Do you guys think the outcome of the election will, if this thing gets stretched out until, like, you know, the new reps come in January, will have an impact on this guy, actually? Because they're saying that they might launch an investigation into his background, meaning his contacts with the White House, because he could have been a mole this whole time, right? Telling Trump everything that's happening with the investigation.
Well, he presumably was. I mean, that's what he was there for. I mean, I think John Kelly called him, like, the eyes and ears of the White House. And then there's a whole issue of whether it's constitutional. It's one of those questions that's, like, very much academic, like a deep academic niche subject that's now, like, front and center of, like, crisis politics. But under the Appointments Clause, there are arguments both ways. But, like, there's a really good chance here that Trump couldn't do what he did in putting Whitaker as acting AG because he is not Senate confirmed. And he basically wrote the rules so that the Senate confirmed people wouldn't be the line of Sessions. And then when Sessions stepped down, this guy would take over.
I have a hard time believing that he's going to be, you know, in February, that he'll be the attorney general. I, you know, there's just plenty of other people who can do that same job and be, you know, a Trump toady.
And get Senate confirmed. This guy's going to be a total toady. That's his advantage. It might be hard to get someone this toady, even through a Republican Senate. Like, he's got, like, toady level 12.
Yeah, I think there's enough. I think there's enough Republicans who, while they completely support trying to squash the investigation as much as possible, you know, think there's probably, you know, 100 better people to do it.
Yeah, he's a joke, and they know it, and they don't want him there.
Exactly.
They want, but, like, that's the thing. Like, there's no one who is not a joke that Trump would trust to do the job that Whitaker will probably do.
Well, Lindsey Graham, I think
he's so salty. He's so mad he didn't get it.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets his name put up, though, right?
It's been up there for a while. He's been.
Or Chris Kobach.
Oh God. And Chris Christie is, like, the best choice right now. People have floated. Like, Chris Christie is the best.
Chris Christie will never get it. You know what? Because Trump. I think Trump has complete and utter contempt for Christie. Oh, yeah. I think, first of all, it's because I really think he holds his weight against him. You know what I mean? I think he's just kind of disgusted by him, and he just used him. Christie's not getting nothing out of Trump.
But the sad thing is, like, he's actually the best one. If I had to pick someone on the names that have floated, it's Christie by a mile.
I'll be honest. Jeanine Pirro is my nightmare. Oh, no. I mean, that's really my nightmare.
Kobach's pretty bad, too. They're all pretty bad, but, like, ugh.
That's true.
At least Pirro could. Okay, let's go back a bit, though. Do y'all recall a few weeks ago, months ago? I have no idea. At some point in this calendar year, there was the whole, like, Rosenstein, is he fired, is he not thing. I mean, Whitaker was behind that, right? Is that safe to assume now?
Oh, was that right?
I think so. So I really want to know what New York. I mean, if what it looks like to me is that, like, that whole thing was Whitaker's attempt to get oust Rosenstein so he could take over Rosenstein's job. Which means I wonder who the hell the sources were for the New York Times and their story that Rosenstein was being serious when he suggested wiretapping the president. Mm. Like, if this is all coming from Whitaker, the New York Times got played.
That's interesting.
It's interesting.
I mean, they were, like, going to the mat for that story and saying their sources have verified it. They were going for a year. Coincidentally, guess who's been in the DOJ for a year. And they were they were really, really, like, going hard. Like, oh, I know you don't want to believe the story, but, like, we invented it. It's true. I don't know if I believe New York Times in this one. Like, their sourcing was very thin.
Do you really think that they would take this guy at his word?
Well, it wouldn't be just him, but I mean, it does look like Whitaker was, like, involved in those shenanigans, and he was trying to basically force Rosenstein out so he could take over the probe. I'm not a Rosenstein fan. I think he is a very complicated, problematic figure. And sometimes I wonder if we're really better off with him nominally, he's not anymore, but having him nominally in charge. But Rosenstein is not the kind of guy that would seriously suggest white having the president. Right. That's not the kind of guy he is. He's just not. He's not nearly interesting enough for that. So the whole story, I just have trouble buying, especially with such thin and weird sourcing. And I wonder if they got played.
That would be a great story, actually. A story about a story.
They won't publish because they're the only ones who know of this, so.
BuzzFeed will have to break that new story or somebody else.
Third Love uses millions of real women's measurements to design its bras with breast size and shape in mind for an impeccable fit and incredible feel. Look, ladies, we all know that not only are we different sizes, but we are different shapes. Now, a lot of brands have not caught up to that fact of life. But Third Love is the industry leader that has 70 sizes, including its signature half cup sizes, which are brilliant. If we have half shoe sizes, why shouldn't we have half cup sizes? And I love the quality of Third Love bras. They feel beautiful, they look beautiful, and the details make the difference. There is quality in every stitch. They've used premium fabrics and expert designs. Now, one of the things I love the most is I can save a trip to the store. I can save having to go through racks and racks and racks to look for the right size and design and cut and all that, because all you do is you find your fit in 60 seconds with Third Love's online fit finder, place your order, and try it on at home. No more awkward fitting room experiences. And Third Love offers a 100% fit guarantee. Their team of expert fit stylists are dedicated to helping you find your perfect fit, and if you don't love their product, returns and exchanges are free and easy. By the way, Third Love also takes its customer input seriously, and they recently launched their most requested style, cotton t-shirt bras and cotton underwear. People, cotton t-shirt bras. I mean, you want to lounge around in the holidays? This is the way to do it. It took 2 years to develop and perfect the cotton collection, which is made with a premium cotton called Pima. And the result is a line of incredibly soft, smooth, and breathable bras and underwear you're going to want to wear every single day. Now, Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everybody, so right now they're offering our listeners 15% off your first order. Just go to thirdlove.com/45th right now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/45th for 15% off today.
About the Mueller probe, what do you think is going to happen? You think anything's going to happen? We've been waiting. We were hoping the day after the midterms, like, there'd be like a drop, but
well,
nothing's going on.
After. The Friday after is when it would happen. That's grand jury day.
Wait, didn't. So this past Friday, what happened?
Well, presumably Whitaker's now in charge, and he blocked anything that was going to happen.
Yeah, the only thing that hit Friday was the Wall Street Journal piece about sort of confirming that Trump had a hand in paying off Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal, and that he had, for some reason, specifically in conversation, like, sort of framed it in terms of helping the campaign, which would make the really difficult part of campaign finance indictment a lot easier, in that he sort of made the connection himself.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, this is not going to be an Edwards problem. Like, Edwards was, I mean, there was, it probably wasn't ambiguous in reality, but there was room for it to look ambiguous. Here, not so much. And we're still looking at more and more. I mean, like, they had an 80-page indictment prepared for Michael Cohen. And then when he pled out, they changed it to a 22-page one. So, like, there is a lot more info out there that we don't know yet, and we don't know who all is a target of that investigation.
All right, well, so let's move on a bit. I want to talk about, leading up to the midterms, we spent weeks and weeks and weeks just being bombarded with news of the incoming invasion, immigrant invasion, the caravan. I haven't heard anything about the caravan since the midterms. However, the military actually has been deployed to the border, and I feel like this is a story not a lot of people are picking up on. There are 5,600 troops on the southern border right now waiting for this caravan. Is that not batshit insane?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, okay.
More importantly, we also have the change in asylum rules they're trying to push through, which they kind of
Wait, what?
You didn't hear this? What? This is the problem. Like, they are winning because they are able to, like, do this shit all the time. And there's no way for anyone, no matter how much they care, how much they pay attention, to follow it all. So big stuff like the asylum ban, or basically the asylum getting changed and to be extremely, it's probably worse than the travel ban.
Okay, can you update me? Because did this happen today?
No, last week.
Oh my God, I really missed it. All I've seen is Senator Cotton's stupid tweet about asylum. People should go back home and apply for asylum. Well, that's not how asylum works.
There was a process like that at one point.
No. That's the refugee process, and that still exists. You can apply as a refugee to enter the country outside of the country. Asylum happens in the country. That's always, either happens at the border, or you enter and you have 1 year to apply for asylum after you enter on some other legal status. That's always been the asylum. So what are they trying to change it to?
So just, he had, like, an executive order, and basically the thing is you have to come through a port of entry now, or you can't claim asylum. That's the sort of the big one.
Mm. Well, you can claim asylum at the port of entry. I mean, I don't know.
But they're going to restrict port of entries and who can get in there is the whole point.
Mm. Yeah, they'll just not let them in the port of entry. I mean, if you're not on U.S. soil, you can't claim asylum, basically. By executive order, can you do that?
I mean, that's I don't know. Current Supreme Court, like, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. All right, well, okay, I'm going to take a deeper look at that so I can talk about it in a more informed way. And you think, as an immigration lawyer, I should be on top of that, but I totally missed it.
The only other thing that I think is important about the caravan is just how easily manipulated the media is by Trump, and that he can kind of gin up whatever, and then the media covers it credulously. And to the extent that the media should have covered it, I think it should have been what is the reality behind this, rather than sort of repeating Trump's claims about it and like reporting on it sort of breathlessly, even if like at some point during it, you're like, well, it's so far away, or, you know, this is what the reality probably is. I mean, the number one point of that whole story should be, this is all BS, you know, from beginning to end.
There's not
Middle Easterners in there. They're not anywhere close. By the time they show
children,
up,
children, women, yeah,
it's going to be a small percentage of what's going on right now. It's just all these things, and those should have been the lead, you know, rather than sort of, well, but on the other hand, type of thing.
Saying the media got played by Trump is like saying Susan Collins gets played by McConnell.
Right.
I feel like they're fully in on the game. It's just it benefits them to play along with it.
But I mean, most of the media coverage I saw actually refuted what he was saying. I mean, but I guess the problem is people just don't read beyond the headlines. And he's talking to his base. None of the substance of this issue actually matters. It doesn't matter how much the media says, actually, that's not true, because I did see the media doing that. The base doesn't care, because then the media is fake news, right? I mean, this just goes, oh, speaking of which, we didn't even talk about Acosta, did we? Did we do that last week, or did that just happen?
That
after
was happening, I think, while we were, I can't remember what we're recording, though.
Oh,
and
God.
You know what? Acosta talks about himself enough. We can move on.
We can move
it's
on.
Awful. No, it is awful. It's horrendous, and it's a deliberate distraction at the same time. And
yeah. You know, that happened, and then recently, 2 days ago, he also, 2 or 3 days ago, he berated a black reporter, telling her, your questions are all stupid. It's the third time he's done that to a black female reporter.
Oh my God, he's been, like, attacking black reporters, like, women reporters constantly. It's open.
Yeah, he has such disgust for black women, I think. I mean, what he does to Maxine Waters, I mean, like, it's relentless. I mean, Oprah's the only one that he's held back
he hasn't actually, like, full-on attacked Oprah, has he?
He hasn't. He said something recently after Oprah came out and was campaigning. Where was she campaigning? I guess in Illinois. He's like, Georgia. Well, like, she used to like me and... Oh, okay, that's right. It's right. She was out there for Abrams. He's like, she used to like me, so I still like her. I don't know what that's about. That's weird.
Dude, he proposed her for his vice president. He, like, proposed to have Oprah be his vice president when he was, like, pondering running in 1990.
That is fascinating. All right, well, this caravan, I don't know what it's going to look like when it gets to the border. I don't know what our asylum laws are going to look like by the time they get there. Yeah, but right now we have 5,600 troops there. And they are, by the way, they have been deployed there until December 15th. That's what the orders are for. Price tag around $200 million.
Jesus.
There's no electricity. They're intense. For no reason. There's like no war zone happening here. And all of these people, over 5,000 troops, are going to be away from their families for Thanksgiving, at least, if not, you know, more of the holidays. And they have nothing to do. They're literally just laying around waiting for the stupid caravan to arrive. At the same time, I wanted to mention this other story that caught my eye, which is this, that the Department of Veteran Affairs apparently has a bunch of IT glitches, which means that the GI Bill benefits that's supposed to cover housing and education for veterans have been delayed or never delivered. Apparently, there are hundreds of thousands of veterans who have been waiting for the housing payments, have not gotten a disbursement in months, and are like on the verge of homelessness. And so apparently, you know, Donald Trump signed something called the Forever GI Bill in 2017, but the demands of the bill were so great that the IT just couldn't basically catch up. And, you know, so, yeah, right now, as of November 8th, 82,000 veterans were waiting for the housing payments, and they have a few weeks remaining the school semester. So, you know, he's doing great, great stuff for the veterans. I just wanted to point that out. My very favorite pair of pants in my entire wardrobe, and I have a walk-in closet, so I got a lot of pants, are my Beta brand pants. Okay. They are called the dress pant yoga pants by Beta brand. And I know you have them too, Susan, right?
Oh yeah.
Do you not love them?
Do I not wear them a little bit too often? Possibly.
Yes. I wear mine all the time. I love them. First of all, the reason I love them, number one, listen to the name, the dress pant yoga pant, okay? Like, they look like dress pants, but they feel like yoga pants. They're business on the bottom, a party on the top. You're comfortable. And, you know, by the way, I just want to say, for the last month, I have been part of a personal training program, and I've lost, very happily, 11 pounds and a bunch of inches. And the great thing about these pants is they still fit me excellently, whereas other pants are not fitting me so well, happily, but I can still continue to wear my Beta brand dress pant yoga pants.
They are amazing. You're super comfy and no one can tell you're comfy. That's the genius of them.
They've got all kinds of styles, boot cut, straight leg, crop, leggings. They have black, navy, gray, khaki, and they also have like seasonal and limited edition colors that come out every single month. I promise you, they're going to be like the best pants you've ever owned.
And if you're like me, you may wear them too often. That's fine. No judgment here.
Just buy more than one.
Yeah, they're great. Seriously, these are the best pants ever.
So visit betabrand.com and use our code 45th to get 20% off your pair. Millions of women agree that these are the most comfortable pants you'll ever wear to work or at home on the couch. That's betabrand.com, BETABRAND.com, and use our code 45th to get 20% off your dress pant yoga pants today. All right, Kim Jong-un, the love affair ends. End of an affair.
Really, though? Because Trump's happy to be like, pretend everything's fine and to keep going like this. I wouldn't say it's over yet.
Well, the report came out today. Toby, yeah, did you see this, by the way?
Trump doesn't have to believe it.
I did.
Trump doesn't have to believe it?
Yeah.
I mean, okay. Well, here's the report. North Korea has moved ahead with its ballistic missile program. It's got 16 hidden bases have now been discovered with the new commercial satellite images. So apparently what North Korea did was it offered to dismantle a major launching site, which it began to do, then it stopped. But it continued to make improvements on a dozen other sites that would bolster launches of conventional and nuclear warheads. So not only that, but Trump's weakening of the U.S. stance toward North Korea also has given them leverage, because what they're doing now is like the sanctions basically are collapsing and they have resumed trade with Russia and China because of Trump's love for Kim Jong-un and his softening stance.
It is news and it's a great story. You should read it. But like also it's so predictable.
It should be big news.
But like it's predictable. Like of course this was going to happen. Like this was never not going to happen. Like everyone knew this was going to happen. It's just a matter of confirming it. And it's not going to change anything because everyone knew it was going to happen anyway and Trump's going to ignore it. So it's not going to change anything.
Trump is just so manipulable by foreign leaders, and they all know it. Like even somebody as isolated as North Korea, and you know, it's difficult to watch both how easy it is and how blatantly they do. All you have to do is
write a letter. Love letters.
You know, exactly. Blow a little smoke Trump's way. He thinks that you like him.
A glowing orb.
Yeah. So it's just it's ridiculous, and I think. You know, I don't know if we're going to talk about the trip to Europe, but I think it's just even more of that.
We're going to do that now.
Yeah.
We're going to do that now. Yeah, let's talk about that. So Trump just got back from Paris, right? He was in Paris. He was there for the 100-year anniversary of the armistice that ended World War I. 100-year anniversary. It didn't go well. I don't think we made a good showing on the world stage. All right, so let's talk a little bit about what happened. First of all, before he even landed, he tweets a direct attack on Macron. Now, Macron is hosting this whole thing. He tweeted, President Macron of France has just suggested that Europe build its own military in order to protect itself from the US, China, and Russia. Very insulting. But perhaps Europe should first pay its fair share of NATO, which the US subsidizes greatly.
Oh, now, I saw this tweet, Trump going there? Because of the parade. This whole trip was because Trump wanted to see another French parade.
Was it really? I didn't know that. But I also didn't know what this tweet was in response to. What did President Macron say?
A misunderstanding. He gave a speech and Trump, I guess I don't know if the translation, whatever happened, Trump did not hear the actual version of the speech. And he maybe deliberately misinterpreted it. So he portrayed it as Macron calling the U.S. an enemy. It was not that. It was talking about how it would not describe the U.S. as an enemy. It was just saying that Europe needs to have its own defense capabilities, which is exactly what Trump keeps saying he wants to happen, like with less NATO. But he misinterpreted or misread or was misreported, I'm not sure what, as like if Macron said that the U.S. is like China and Russia, an enemy.
You know he's jealous of Macron.
Oh, he totally is. And Trudeau.
He's so threatened by him because he's so much better looking. and smart. Right, Toby? Much better looking.
I mean, it's a really low bar. So I feel like that's not even a compliment.
And then really Macron also, like, practices, like, crushing handshake for the first time they met so he can squeeze Trump's hand. Did you see that picture?
Yeah. I'm not sure I'm a huge Macron fan, but, like, I do like his trolling.
Oh, he totally does. The thing.
And it's just so easy, you know? I mean, it's just like these sort of animal level dominance things, like, make a difference.
And as long as you, like, can, like, make it clear that you're in on the joke, you can do it just fine. Like what Macron does, basically. Like, he's not trying to actually play Trump's game. He's, like, winking to the world, like, look what I'm going to do with Trump, and, like, this freaking handshake thing that's awkward and I can't hardly watch it because it's so embarrassing. Oh, did you see what him and Putin? I didn't like that. Like, the pat down.
Oh, that Putin gave Trump a little pat. Right? First of all, this picture, and I'm going to, but this is a picture of, you know, these global leaders lining up as other leaders are, you know, kind of joining the group. And Putin is approaching. So you see Macron, you see Merkel, you see Trump. The other, everybody else looks really sober as Putin approaches. And Trump just looks like he saw his best friend. He looks delighted. Like a kid in a candy store. And then so Putin approaches him, gives him a thumbs up. I don't know, rubs him down. I don't know what he does.
Ritualistic.
They should have just like bumped chest or something. But, you know, okay, so this thing started off with Trump attacking Macron. And then the next day it seemed like both the guys had made up or something. They appeared together. They made some brief remarks at the palace. And then there was going to be a very important event, which is kind of the central event of this two-day trip, which was a visit to a cemetery, an American cemetery, a memorial outside of Paris, where he was supposed to show up to honor American soldiers who had died in World War I. But he did not go.
Drizzle attacks again.
Right. The White House said that inclement weather prevented the helicopter from flying. It's an hour's drive from Paris. It was like literally drizzling. So Trump doesn't show up there. Incredibly insulting. And actually, nobody knows what Trump was doing in that time. There's no details about those few hours that he was completely missing.
Was he meeting Putin? Probably. I have no idea. I'm making that up.
I don't
even know if Putin was even in France at that point. So I'm kidding.
Yeah, I don't know if he was or not at that point. But the fact that he skipped this did cause a bunch of outrage. And I think it was, personally, I think it was a hair issue. What do you guys think?
Everyone knows helicopters can't fly in drizzle.
They can't. He also doesn't know how to work an umbrella.
It was a great risk. But it's funny.
Suraj, you have nice teeth. I don't know if you know that, but you are genetically blessed. Some of us have to work harder at it, but for the last couple of years, I've been using a product that has made it much easier for me to keep my teeth healthy, and I want to tell you about it.
So what's it called?
So Quip is a better electric toothbrush that's created by dentists and designers, and that's important because, number one, the dentists make this toothbrush amazingly effective, and the designers make it beautiful. It is this very sleek, modern-looking toothbrush. I travel with it. It doesn't have a big old bulky stand. You just literally stick the toothbrush stand onto your mirror. It's kind of amazing. But what I love about it the most is this, that I have been a person my whole life where when I have an electronic toothbrush, I always forget to change the brush heads. Does that happen to you?
All the time. I can't tell you how many times or how few I actually change my brush
head. Actually change. Because you got to go and buy it and then think about it and change it.
And it costs an arm and a leg.
It does. That's true. And with Quip, it doesn't, because the brush heads are actually automatically delivered on a dentist recommended schedule every 3 months for $5. Just $5. It's amazing.
Wow.
And Quip is one of the first electric toothbrushes that's been accepted by the American Dental Association. It's got thousands of verified star reviews. It has made my dental routine better also because it's got this little pulsing timer that reminds you it's time to switch sides. Don't keep brushing the right side of your mouth. And it's a very sensitive brush. So I love Quip, and I think you would love Quip. You should definitely give it a shot.
So if I subscribe to Quip, it just starts at $25. If I go to getquip.com/45th right now, then I'll get my first refill pack for free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That's it.
$25. I mean, look, you cannot get other electric toothbrushes for $25, all right? You get your starter pack for $25. They send you this awesome toothbrush. Again, it's beautiful. And you're going to get your first refill pack for free if you go to getquip.com/45th, and after that, $5 every 3 months. That's it. Once again, go to getquip.com/45th, get your first refill pack for free, and a Quip electric toothbrush for just $25.
That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/45th.
So also, you know, Macron hosted a Paris Peace Forum, which Trump did not go to. While it was being inaugurated by Macron, Merkel, the Secretary General of the UN, Trump was outside of Paris at a different cemetery where he offered some remarks. So he just basically said, screw y'all. He also didn't show up at the same time as the other leaders during the motorcade. Everybody else showed up at the same time. Trump arrived by himself in his own motorcade because, you know, he loves a motorcade. And then Netanyahu and Putin, those are the other two who arrived solo. And Macron gave him a little bit of subtweeting where he talked about nationalism. And, you know, this was like maybe a week after Trump said, I'm a nationalist. And Macron goes on to say, patriotism is the exact opposite of nationalism. Nationalism is its betrayal. Pretty strong language.
Not really, because like now we've reached the phase of like fascism where making totally benign, standard, nothing remarks about democracy is considered an attack on the United States.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, France has been there before.
That's true.
Yeah.
They've done that. And I thought it was pretty powerful seeing him and, you know, Merkel together. Peace is possible. It can happen.
Did you hear that story? I don't know if this actually happened or not, but we were driving somewhere. My wife was reading me this thing where Trump had met with the leaders of Estonia, Lithuania, and Latvia.
Yeah. Oh, God.
And they
the
got
Baltic states versus the Balkans. Yeah.
Yeah. They got totally freaked out when he started like blaming them for like the war in Yugoslavia back in the 90s. And then it dawned on them that he confused the Baltics and the Balkans.
Do you think they knew right away? Like, how long did it take them to, like, to figure out what was going on?
Like, if you're not used to the fact that he doesn't know anything, like, I think it would just be dumbfounding if, like, Putin came over here and, like, didn't know the difference between, like, New York City and, like, Mississippi or something. It would probably take you a while to, like, connect the dots and be like, oh, okay, now I get it. Like, I just think you assume that, like, a president would know basic.
Yeah. So you're trying to figure European out, like, what he's government. Talking about. And, like,
yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. You're like, well, we definitely didn't have any war in Yugoslavia. Sorry.
Well, I'll be honest. I am surprised that he even knew there was a war in Yugoslavia, even though he got it confused with where it was.
I'm sure he wanted a hotel somewhere in Sarajevo or something and couldn't do it because of the war. That's probably why he's pissed.
Yeah, maybe that's what happened. All right. Have we missed anything else this week?
Yes. There's been a million ton of things.
Right.
Zinke
right.
has still not been, like, I still want Zinke's downfall. I mean, it's hard to be worse than Pruitt, but Zinke is just so smarmy. You know, I'll be happy when he's gone. Also, Ross is apparently on the outs. But, I mean, everyone's always reporting Kelly's on the outs. We'll see if he really is. But we should have some big changes soon with a post-election flood of escapees.
Trump's tweeting about the fires in California.
Oh, God.
That's right.
It's just...
He took the side of the fire.
Yeah, exactly. And then somebody apparently told him he'd gone a step too far and took his phone away from him. And then there was this sort of more sort of bland
really?
Read about, you know, we stand with the people of California or something. Did you see that? I mean, there was something that was clearly not tweeted by him.
There's like a bunch of not him. It's now all this nice stuff about like, oh, please, like
the firefighters and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have there been 25 fatalities? This was the last thing I read.
These are the like.
In the fire.
I feel like I've kind of gotten used to like the fires in California because even though they've been worse recently, they've been, I don't know, just it's a thing that happens a lot now, like mass shootings. But these are a whole other scale.
Which we haven't talked about, by the way.
Yeah, because you know what? America's a place where massive shootings have happened, and that's not really news. It's local news at best.
I thought the other interesting thing about the fires was the use of prisoners to fight fires, including juvenile prisoners.
I didn't see
and
that.
Then, yeah. Not so that's that. So there's that. And then sort of the side issue is, yeah, they can't become firefighters once they're out of prison, which,
the worst part. Like, there's like, okay, like one, I have serious problems with someone who is not being paid and not free, risking their lives for a job.
Right.
But like, I guess I could be convinced that this is not an awful, inhumane practice if they were, in fact, getting training for a job that would be really hard to get for anyone, but could, like, set them on a path out.
Why could they not? Are
because
you
they can't be.
Former...
If you have a record, you can't be a firefighter. So, like, these people who are risking their damn lives as firefighters for no pay, well, like, what, $1 a day, if that? They can't be firefighters when they get out. Like, but that'd be the only way to justify.
I actually didn't know that. I knew for law enforcement, obviously, but I did not know that for firefighters, you have to have a clean criminal record. Is that just, it's got to be different in different like jurisdictions, right?
Yeah. I don't know if that's just California. Like, I can't imagine that every state allows juvenile prisoners to be sent into these wildfire situations. But again, like if the idea is, you know, it's a correctional facility, and what you're trying to do is prepare people for life outside. It seems like this is like, you know, example number one of right. of training for a specific job that is hard to find people to do. And like, if
but
nothing
it's not
else,
training
like,
for, I think what it is this risking their lives and, yeah. and putting them in danger so that if something happens to one of them, they just don't care.
And it's cheap labor.
They save labor. A ton of money, apparently.
Disposable labor. That's what
it is. It's $2 a day.
Wow. Oh,
$2 a day. Sorry, not one.
Yeah.
I mean, so, the whole wow. practice is appalling and horrific. And just to make it, like, I would still be very uncomfortable with it if they could be firefighters after. The fact that they can't even do that is just to show how little their lives are valued.
Right.
Well, that's an issue with either the state or the county or whatever it is. That's not a, you know, I don't think Trump has anything to do with that. So it is an issue that local voters can actually do something about and change.
Like they did in Florida on quite a few issues.
Exactly. All right. Okay. I guess that's it for this week. And if there's nothing else to talk about, we will wrap up here, be back in 7 days. Toby, thank you so much for being on, but I want our listeners to know how they can find you online.
You can find me on Twitter at TobyBallNH.
There is also, you have a doppelganger on Twitter, don't you?
Oh, at Bobby Tall. I don't even
know. Yeah,
don't get
confused.
At Bobby Tall NH. It's me, but with a beard.
With a beard,
and
right.
a sassier really, attitude.
Right. It's an alter ego, Toby Ball. And what about Crime Writers On? When do you guys drop, and like, where can folks find your show?
Crime Writers On is on, I think, all the podcast apps. While Serial's going on, we're dropping on Mondays. But once Serial stops, it's every week, and it's usually sometime on Friday.
And your Balls Deep Dive.
God. Okay, so Balls Deep Dive Book Club is a Patreon podcast. So if you go to Patreon/Partners in Crime, I think, and if you join at like a $5 per month level, you get that. And then another $1, you get Laura Brooker's Rage Walk Facebook group.
Well, it's totally worth it. I love listening to Crime Writers On every week. And thanks again. And we'd love to have you on again. So thanks so much for joining us.
All right. Thank you.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.